Almost 7 decades after the first nuclear attack in the world, we're asking how safe our planet can be with none of the countries possessing nuclear weapons willing to let go of them. Stay with News Analysis.
The final stages of World War II in 1945. U.S. Army Air Force preparing to drop the 4,000-kilogram uranium bomb, codenamed Little Boy, on the Japanese city of Hiroshima. And the morning of August 6th turned into a time of tragedy the world will never forget. When the little boy was dropped on the city, 70,000 people were incinerated immediately. Another 70,000 died of injuries and radiation exposure in the following years. The U.S. dropped a second atomic bomb on the city of Nagasaki just a few days later, right at the time when news of the first catastrophe were surfacing. That second attack took the lives of 70,000 more people. 67 years on, the Japanese nation is still grieving. Tens of thousands, including aging survivors, relatives, and government officials, attended the annual ceremony at Hiroshima Peace Memorial Park. Speaking at the ceremony, Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda said the lessons of Hiroshima must not be forgotten. Also, Hiroshima Mayor Kazumi Matsui called for a nuclear-free world. As a nation that has suffered the only nuclear attacks in history, the Japanese are hoping for a world free from nuclear weapons so that no other people will have to go through a similar tragedy. But in a world where nuclear states are spending hundreds of billions of dollars to upgrade their atomic arsenals, that appears to be a far-fetched wish.
The Western world is not going to risk the wrath of the United States or Israel by coming out and basically calling for nuclear disarmament when their power base resides in appeasing the United States and appeasing these international Zionist lobbies that hold so much political, economic, and social sway in their country. So how can they come out and protest against and call for the abolishment of nuclear weapons?
Well, joining me now live from Philadelphia is political analyst and writer Mr. Lin Din. I'd also like to introduce senior editor of Veterans Today, Mr. Gordon Duff, with us via Skype from Ohio, and also peace activist from Baltimore with us live, Mr. Max Obozevsky. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question goes to our guest in Philadelphia, Lin Din. Now, Mr. Din, many have been saying in a lot of articles that I've been reading today when it comes to the issue of nuclear disarmament that nuclear weapons are useless, therefore they're harmless. Would you agree with that?
Well, how can they be harmless? Nuclear energy itself is harmful. And these countries that possess nuclear weapons, and nuclear energy has a competitive advantage. That's why they hang on to these weapons. If you look at the countries that are the major nuclear powers, Russia, China, the USA, the UK, France, and you have to add Israel too, which also has nuclear weapons. Those are the countries that are most powerful right now. They call the shots. So that's why they hang on to nuclear bombs, so they can dictate war events. If you look at the US and UK and France and Israel, you should count all the nuclear warheads together because they are one block. So that is the most belligerent force right now, and they're using the nuclear leverage to dictate war events.
Mm. And Gordon Duff, let's bring you on this as well. Well, we are speaking about the reasons why not a single country has gotten rid of its nuclear weapons. Some people are saying this is about a nuclear superiority, a kind of deterrence. As our guest Lin Din there was saying as well, the issue of guaranteeing the security of a nation when it comes to how officials describe it. Basically, what do you think are the reasons? And could you say that there is any strategic value in keeping nuclear weapons?
Well, there are a couple of different levels to look at this. We left two nations out, Pakistan and India, and they are of the highest risk of nuclear war of any two nations on Earth. Most people don't know, but Since 1982, Brazil has held between 10 and 20 nuclear weapons that they had developed. Japan has an interim nuclear capability in that they have they are sitting on tons of enriched uranium at a facility in Aomori Prefecture, Roko Kyushu, and bombs that are ready to assemble but not assembled. They have decided, though, they have the capability not to exercise that capability, which is an interim standing that some have suggested would be a position that they could live with involving Iran. The issue is brought up by our previous speaker, however, as we have clearly seen in the last year that nuclear power itself can be as harmful as nuclear weapons, that although nuclear weapons supposedly have secured peace through mutual assured destruction, every nuclear facility in the world leaks radiation, and the nuclear industry is so powerful it suppresses that news.
Right, let's go to our guest now in Baltimore, peace activist Max Obrzejewski. I hope I'm getting your name right, Max. It is a hard one. The U.S. and Russia, we know, possess more than 90% of the world's nuclear weapons, and 2,000 of those are on high alert, meaning they're ready for launch in minutes. Now, doesn't this reliance on nuclear arsenals encourage the spread of weapons and the increase of the possibility of an accidental launch, for instance, or an intentional even nuclear attack? Do you think?
Absolutely. And the Obama administration has asked for $85 billion to upgrade the nuclear arsenal. It's a crying shame. The dangers are evident. The radiation is poisoning. I'll just speak about the United States because that's where I live. But I think that there is one country that did get rid of its nuclear arsenal. When Nelson Mandela became president of South Africa, they did get rid of the apartheid bomb. So that is what's emboldening some of us in the peace community, that we have to do whatever we can to get rid of these awful, awful weapons. Three friends of mine went to the Y-12 nuclear weapons facility in Oak Ridge, Tennessee on July 28th and engaged in a plowshares demonstration. And they actually shut down this nuclear weapons lab.
Right.
So I think we today here in Baltimore, we're going to commemorate for the 28th year the bombing of Hiroshima. And we actually will have two people who were there when the bomb fell on Hiroshima speaking tonight. And as well, we have somebody that's coming from Fukushima.
Right.
Because we want to make the connection between nuclear weapons and nuclear power.
Right. Thank you very much. I guess they're in Baltimore referring to what is concerning now, becoming concerning for a lot of peace activists in the world. Back to Lynn Dinh in Philadelphia. Ms. Dinh, when we are speaking about reducing stockpiles, downsizing stockpiles, we're reminded of the START Treaty, the new START Treaty between the United States and Russia. Now, a lot of observers were saying that although that treaty is about downsizing or rather reducing stockpiles, it is also about creating more tactical and smaller nuclear weapons. So do you think that it could be viewed as any kind of improvement in the issue of disarmament?
Well, these treaties are meaningless because unless you get rid of all nuclear weapons, as long as you have some nuclear weapons, then we're still in danger. And like I said, these major powers, such as Russia, United States, and China, they're not going to let go of the military advantage, the tactical advantage. And I think the world is in more danger of those three major powers, again, China, Russia, and United States, engaging in indirect or direct wars than ever, because the United States, for example, is in serious crisis, economic and political crisis, so that its only survival tactic right now is to ensure its military hegemony worldwide. So there's no reason for it to give up its nuclear advantage. So I see it as provoking China and Russia even more intensely in the near future, and thus provoking a possible nuclear showdown. So these treaties are just symbolic, and they are quite meaningless in my mind.
Right, you refer there to the economic situation of the United States as well there. And speaking about that, Gordon Duff, a lot of people have been saying, well, the United States has been spending so much, hundreds of billions of dollars, to maintain its nuclear arsenal, to repair them, to produce new nuclear weapons. We're asking, is it worth it? I mean, we're hearing some generals in the Air Force, elsewhere, even in the nuclear industry, saying that the cost of maintaining these stockpiles that are not even used and not even on the alert status is just too expensive now for the United States.
Well, there's an additional issue that people that don't work in the defense industry are unaware of, but the U.S. has produced approximately 600 micro-nukes, some of them smaller than a soccer ball, with a capability as low as a single ton of TNT, dialable up to 40 tons of TNT. There is evidence that those weapons have been used in Iraq and Afghanistan. Studies have found uranium-235 to be in the bodies of the population there. Plus, of course, you have to count depleted uranium munitions as a form of nuclear weapon. We have used thousands of tons of these munitions, which have long-term health effects on the entire planet, have raised the radiation levels of the entire Middle East, and spreading much further than that. So this this problem runs much further than guessed, and our nuclear technology has allowed tactical nuclear weapons to become not only so commonly used, but they are now being used in place of conventional weapons, because new tactical nukes leave no residual radiation that can be detected by conventional Geiger counters. And I have that information from individuals who have worked at our research labs. And we have used those weapons on countries in the last few years.
Right. And on that note, let's just bring that up with Max in Baltimore. We are hearing, Max, of depleted uranium being used in Iraq and Afghanistan. We even had one program here on Press TV about the effects of depleted uranium on children who are being born now in Iraq's Fallujah city because of the depleted uranium that's been used there. So basically, when it comes to the use of these types of nuclear weapons, for instance, in the form of DU in war zones, who is responsible? Who is going to stand accountable for the effects that they're having?
Well, it's our government officials. It's our military. Your listeners should know this. December 19th, 1999, four peace activists went to a military base outside of Baltimore to disarm helicopters and also warthogs, which fire depleted uranium. This was Philip Berrigan and three of his colleagues. Philip Berrigan is now dead. He was the founder of the Plowshares movement, but they recognized that far back the dangers of depleted uranium. All four of them were convicted in a trial in Baltimore County in March of 2000. So there are people that are going to continue to speak out, and we have to be emboldened to take serious action if we have any hope to get rid of these awful, awful weapons.
Right. And Din, again, let's have your view on this as well. One major question is why the United States want to be using these kinds of weapons in the form of DU or in other forms that we may not know that much about in war zones. Is this about some kind of nuclear testing? And is the United States actually acting beyond the principles of international law or treaties on nuclear weapons?
While the United States spends trillions on weapon research, it's always trying to find better and more lethal weapons. So, just take cluster bombs, for example. Most countries in the world don't want cluster bombs, but the United States insists on using cluster bombs because it's useful in its warfare. So the movement is not towards less lethal weapons and more peace, but towards more violent, more lethal, more genocidal weapons, because these are the tactical advantages that an empire like the United States has, and it's not going to let go of that. And I should add that all the major countries are in competition with each other to produce more lethal weapons. So the world is moving towards more warfare and not less.
So Gordon Duff in Ohio, would you say that we're not going to see any serious move toward nuclear disarmament, in spite of the hopes that people expressed in Japan on this 67th anniversary of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings?
Well, I think the one of the things, and if this is an issue I would put to the Japanese people, if they would correct their own history books, which are as edited and inaccurate as those of Israel or the United States, Japan exploded its first nuclear weapon August 5th, 1945. The uranium that came that was used on Hiroshima was from Sweden. It was being shipped to Japan until it was intercepted by the U.S. It was planned by the Japanese to be used in a nuclear attack on San Francisco. Japan had a very advanced nuclear weapons program in World War II, far more advanced than Germany. They have erased that from their own history. So they're learning lessons, but they're learning lessons where they're not taking responsibility for their own full complicity in what had gone on. They were as involved in nuclear weapons as the United States was. And they only missed by days of being the first one to use nuclear weapons. Japan's policy was to attack the U.S. Now that they've just erased that from their own history. The issue brought up earlier about depleted uranium and genocide is a critical issue, because depleted uranium isn't just the from the Apache helicopter. We have 50 different munitions using depleted uranium, and it is a powerful genetic weapon, and it is being sold needlessly as a profiteering move as waste products by the nuclear power industry and their powerful lobby within the United States. These weapons have no place on the battlefield, and they are a violation of every imaginable international law.
Right, we're running out of time. I'd just like to give the last comments to Max in Baltimore. Max, when we are speaking about nuclear weapons, the issue of Obama's Nobel Peace Prize is also discussed. People saying that the American president who got that prize is the same president who, as our guest Gordon Duff was saying there, is going ahead with the use of nuclear weapons against civilians in war zones. Your last comments.
Well, it's an embarrassment, but remember that Henry Kissinger also won a Nobel Peace Prize. The Nobel Committee, as I understand it, tried to goad President Obama into nuclear disarmament, but it has not worked. Those of us in the peace movement will continue to press him and all of the nuclear warriors to abolish nuclear weapons and eliminate nuclear power.
Thank you very much, peace activist Max Obozevsky, joining us there live from Baltimore. I'd also like to thank our guest in Ohio, joining us via Skype, senior editor of Veterans Today, Mr. Gordon Duff, and also with us from Philadelphia, political analyst and writer, Mr. Lynn Din. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us on another edition of News Analysis. From me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye.